This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Pipeline growth and outbound lead generation is such an essential aspect of thriving in sales. But like everything else, there's both an art and a science to it. And it requires mastering not just skills, but having the right mindset, resilience, and attitude, both short and long term. Our guest today on Mental Selling is Jeff Winters. Jeff is an expert at the strategic planning and execution of B2B lead generation and getting better at generating meetings that fill sales pipelines. He's Chief Revenue Officer of Abstract Marketing Group, a B2B lead generation company and business growth agency, and he was previously the founder and former president of Sapper Consulting. Jeff, thanks so much for joining me today. It's great to talk to you.
Hey, Will, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Been looking forward to this episode. We've been chatting for a while. I wanted to start with talking about the mindset of pipeline growth and outbound lead generation. It's a challenging and crowded environment. It's harder than ever to get prospects' attention, but it's also, at the end of the day, it's the primary role that a salesperson has. From your standpoint, what does a growth-oriented mindset around pipeline growth and lead generation look like?
So I'm going to attack this from corporate mindset all the way down to the SDR mindset. First, everybody at the company has to be behind the fact that sales pipeline is the number one thing you can do to grow your business, period. We got to get behind that. I'll tell you what that looks like at a company where that is the case. At companies where that's the case, when you're doing budgeting for next year in October, and you're going to go, all right, we want to hit a revenue of a gazillion dollars. Everybody goes, yeah, let's do it. They go, how are we going to do that? We're going to sell X number of deals at Y average price. Goes, that's a good idea there. That's a really good idea. And how are we going to get those deals? We're going to do some trade shows and we're going to do some conferences. And then every salesperson is good for X amount of dollars per month. And I've added up the quota of the salespeople and that's how we're going to get there. And that's where most companies stop. That's the end of the revenue conversation until June when they go, what the hell happened? Organizationally, what you got to do is go one step back and go, okay, how many meetings do we need to get the sellers the number of meetings that they need to hit their sales goal? That's like a huge organizational mindset shift of that's the most important number you can hit as a company. Is great meetings. If you give me a company or a sales team with great meetings, I'll figure the rest out. Like even a bad sales team can stumble into deals if you got enough meetings.
Because that's the primary leading indicator versus the lagging indicator of, like you said, where are you at the end of June or beginning of July and that sort of, oh shit moment.
Give me that, I can figure everything else out. It's not only the leading indicator, it's the leading indicator that you can control at a high level. Like a lot of people use leading indicators as which are things you cannot control on a day-to-day basis. My leading indicator is proposals sent. It's like, okay, great. Well, go tell your salespeople to send more proposals. That's not going to generate more deals. It's just going to send more proposals. What can I control day-to-day? To me, the organizational mindset needs to be, we are going to optimize for meetings, period. Optimize for meetings with the right people. You will get the sales numbers you want, give or take within a tolerance. That's how that works. And then I can go into, you may talk a little bit about like mindset of individual meeting setters or managers, or what do you think is helpful? Will?
The mindset of what it takes to do the work day to day, week to week, to get those meetings on your calendar and to break through the noise and be delivering value in a way that gets people to agree to those meetings.
It's tough. And it's like baseball. In baseball, you get 4 hits out of 10, you're a Hall of Famer. And that's failure. That's 40%. It's cold calling's worse. You get 2 out of 3 or 4 out of 100. 3 out of 100, you're all favor. So the first mindset piece needs to be, I am going to fail the vast majority of the time. And I am no great thinker at adding a novel thought there. But here's what I will say. Like the best people that I've seen with the mindset to get meetings create little success moments and little tiny micro goals for themselves and for their teams. That is how you get people, in my mind, over the hump of the mindset of, boy, this sucks because I'm getting rejected 98 out of 100 times. So like mindset number one is, okay, how do I deal with rejection? Number two is your assumptions as leaders on what your people will do from a prospecting perspective are wrong. I guarantee they're wrong. Whatever number of dials or emails or other touch points you're holding people accountable to is not enough. I guarantee it. Because what I hear, Will, we have our SDRs make 50 dials a day. That's not enough. That's not enough. If you're not using using technology to augment that, you could still get 150. You know, so there's like a mindset piece there. And then like in terms of what you're doing and saying tactically, and we can go deeper on this, it's the phone. Right now, it's the phone. The phone is your primary weapon. It needs to be. If it was email, it shouldn't be anymore. It should be a nice to have. The phone is your primary weapon, and it needs to be for a little while.
Do you think salespeople too often are hiding behind email? Like they have that hesitance to pick up the phone because maybe they don't want that live in-person rejection, but they can deal more in their minds with the, I just didn't get a reply.
Picking up the phone sucks. Like I can't also watch a Netflix show on my phone and pick up and then I'll cold call. I can't do that. With email, yeah. There's all sorts of reasons why. And look, when I started the company 10 years ago, it was all email. I did all email for many years. So feel like I can speak with authority on the subject. It's so easy to send an email today and it'll be easier tomorrow to send it than it will be today. But you have to pick up the phone because, like I said, it sucks. And the fact that it sucks is the barrier to entry to most people. It sucks because you get rejected. It sucks because you can't do something else while you're doing it. It sucks because you're going to talk to strangers. Some people don't like that. It sucks because you're generally calling people that don't want to talk to you. I don't love talking to people that want to talk to me all that much.
And when you talked earlier about the leading indicator metric and the goal being meetings, but you also alluded to, I forget how you phrased it, micro successes. Almost like the leading indicator to that leading indicator that you have to monitor. What are some of those things? If you're doing these things right, then the meetings will follow.
Assume a 1% conversion rate, period. Like for all your listeners, assume 1%. How many dials are you going to make? You make 100, you make 2, you make 3. Okay. So that's number one. Number two is conversations that you have with decision makers. Okay. Now I've talked to a decision maker. That's a success point, even if they say no. Now it's how many conversations do I have with decision makers where I can ask them two meaningful questions? Okay, good. Then how many meetings do I book from those quality conversations where I ask two meaningful questions? Because then you're taking no or yes for I want to have a meeting or I don't have a meeting out of the equation is the ultimate measure of whether you're doing a good job. So if I say, look, I want you to make 200 dials today and you did. Awesome. I also want you to have 15 conversations with decision makers, and you did. And then I want you to have 10 conversations of the 15 where you get the answer to two important sales-related questions. You did it. Don't worry about the meetings. Do not worry about them. You will at some point, but don't worry about them now. Because if you're having those good quality conversations, what happens is now next time I call you, Will, I'm not saying, hey, it's Jeff and I'm a stranger. What I'm saying is, hey, we talked a month ago. You told me on that call that you were having some problems with your headphones. Have those been resolved yet? Well, no, they haven't. Okay. You're starting to get these metrics that are 100% within your control and create victories even when you're getting told no.
What's the role of getting direct referrals from customers as a way to augment getting new meetings?
If you can get referrals from customers, like that's the gold in terms of close rates. I'll give you an example from our business. We have prospects come to us all the time. And the common refrain is, I've built my business based on customer referrals, and now I need something either A, more, or B, more predictable, or C, both. If you can get referrals from customers, of course you should. Referrals are the best kind of meetings you can get, bar none, period, the end. The challenge people have with referrals is, number one, they are not structured right as an organization to get referrals. What I mean by that, and we can go deeper on this, is, to me, the best sales organizations have referral business outside of your typical sales organization. Like your hunters are different than your farmers, and like referrals are farming. And then they are very structured in how they ask for referrals, when they ask for referrals, are there points in the journey when you do it? And the compensation is different. There's really good ways to structure referral programs to get more referrals. When it's got to be different from your net new sales team, because otherwise you won't get the productivity you want from your net new sales team. And referrals are by their very nature unpredictable for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is like How many customers do you have that are happy in that given moment? There's a lack of predictability to it. In our business, referrals are a very important mechanism of growth, but they're a nice to have. We need predictability in the must have.
When you and I previously, you touched on something that I think would be really great to share. We were talking about the state of mind a salesperson needs to have to succeed. I don't know if you remember that part of our conversation. Can we get into that?
My word that I say all the time is indifference. And take it outside of sales. The world's going to be callous. The world's going to throw different events at you. And it is your job, in my opinion, as a human, to understand that your reaction to those events is purely your reaction. It's not how the events are happening are the same across people. It's all about how they react to it. And indifference is a very important emotion when you are selling someone, because there's going to be all sorts of different ways that people are interacting with you within a sales call or a sales process. And what you don't want is the opposite of indifference, which is being very desperate. Desperate in the way that you come across, desperate in the way that you end a call. Like, prospects are so hip to this. They're very aware of desperation, but it's hard to put into words how you want a salesperson to behave to say, oh, don't be desperate. Saying don't be desperate is tough. I don't really know how to not be desperate, but I do know how to be indifferent. And indifferent is just the idea that, hey, look, this is a fast-moving train. If you want to get on, great. If you don't, fine. And there's different moments within the call that you can be more or less assertive in the way that you display your indifference. But as a salesperson, I teach all of our people, I need you to be indifferent whether or not this deal closes, which is tough.
Indifference is different from cockiness. It's more like you were saying earlier. It's that I know, I have complete confidence that I've got a lot of people out there I can help. Do you want to be one of them?
Indifference is different than cockiness, but I'll take cocky over desperate. The example I always give is we had this HR person. She was amazing. She was wonderful. But her barrier for what she thought was being mean was actually direct. We sort of had to recalibrate her compass and be like, look, when you think you're being mean, you're actually being direct. That's where we want you. So you got to recalibrate. And sometimes you got to go over the line to find the line in certain instances of life. Not all, but some. And in this one, like, I'd rather you be cocky than desperate. I don't care. I don't mind cocky. I know it turns people off, but I'd rather you be cocky than desperate. In addition to that, you can sniff lack of confidence in what you do or how you do it. I said to a customer today, and I'll give you an example. You tell me, maybe people think this is cocky. We had a customer email say, hey, we'd love to get started. Can you get creative on price? Can you get a little more creative on price? And I sent him a video. Jason, I said, look. I said, we're really excited about the potential to work together. I know you've been talking with so-and-so from our team. I know we can deliver for you in a big way, but no, we can't get creative on price. And that turns people off. I get it. But in our minds, we're the best in the world at what we do. And we charge a fair price and we charge accordingly. So that's what you're getting. If you want to pay for it, if not, don't. I get it. I just wanted you to have the context behind why we don't get creative on
price. Why do you think sales slumps happen? And then as a follow-up to that, what have you seen as the best ways to get out of them?
Sales slumps happen to everyone. And I think the biggest reason sales slumps happen is you have a natural down month or a quarter for whatever reason. And then the compounding change begins. I looked at all my calls. I looked at all my deals. I looked at everything I did. And I found this thing that I want to change. And then you change it. And the change you made was different than the thing you were doing that got you to the place you were at. And then that change compounds, and that change compounds, and there's another change. So what I find is people trying hard to get out of sales slumps end up putting themselves in a worse position. It's as much the tone of indifference, because winning begets winning all the time. So if you are winning, you will win more, and if you're losing, you will lose more, typically as it relates to sales. And this is a leadership thing. This is managers. What I'm getting to is the reason reps go into sales slumps is because managers suck.
That's where I want to get into next, is the role of the sales leader when it comes to sales slumps and getting people out of them. And going back to metrics and leading indicators, but the things that they should be managing and coaching around when it comes to getting people out of their slumps.
When I had a leader and they got a salesperson in a slump, A, it's not the salesperson's fault. It's their fault if the salesperson's been good in the past. And it's the job of the sales manager to take the pressure off and provide little micro wins to build that confidence back. What I've done in the past, I would tell my sales leader, I go, get them a deal. whatever you got to do, get them a deal. And whether it would be getting creative, but often it would be like, I'll go sell a deal, put it in here. I'll do it as a leader and I'll give it to you, or I'll go get you an easy one. That's what I'm thinking about. How do I get that person a deal in a very low friction way? So that's what you should be thinking of as a sales leader, not like, I'm going to go back and watch what you, because everybody does. I'm going to go back and watch what you did for the last 3 months and see what changed this month. No, I guarantee you what changed is they're just not selling. And once they start selling, it'll be better. So your job is to get them a deal, get them an easy one, get them a layup.
What do you tell salespeople that say they're too busy managing customers or their existing book of business to go out and prospect and create new pipeline right now? I'll get to it when I can get to it, but I've got customers right in front of me I've got to deal with first.
That is a refrain from, not that it can't always be true. It can. And frankly, as a business, to me, like salespeople who are also managing customers, I get at certain enterprise levels, that's got to be a thing. Like for me, you want to do another episode on not mental selling, but like mental separating sales from account management or success. That's where I'm at. I don't like those responsibilities coexisting.
And we can get into that though. That'd be an interesting thing to talk a bit about, separating those two, yeah.
What salesperson wouldn't rather be with customers than making calls and building pipeline? That's a thing you'll put to the side of your desk. So I wouldn't have success and sales be the same. I would immediately separate them. So that would be step one. But in the absence of that, I would say bullshit. I don't believe, like, I don't think that's right, because I'm sure that you have customer stuff, but my overwhelming hunch 90% of the time is you're just not doing it. Like, it's the same reason why your kids at home are telling you they have too much work to do instead of cleaning their room. They don't want to clean their room. I think the antidote to that, if you want, is scheduling, frankly. Oh, okay. But I'm like digging in. Show me. I want to see it. Not that I don't trust you, but show me. I want to see it. Because maybe I need to help you. Maybe I need to help get stuff off your plate. So show me all the shit you got to do with that particular customer so I can move responsibilities so you can build pipeline.
Because that's a big responsibility of sales managers. I've heard it time and time again from guests on this show that one of the biggest roles that they play is getting the sort of distractions or unnecessary things or time sucks off of their people's plates. I think that's partly what you're saying.
This is more tolerated in environments where you have newer sales leaders or you have really experienced, successful seller / account. And you're in these exec meetings and it's, yeah, you're talking to your boss. You go, yeah, Bob is really, his pipeline's low because he's spending so much time with customers. And I don't want to mess with Bob. That's not the culture here. Like, the culture here now is we're going to build pipeline and we're going to sell. We're not going to succumb to one or two people who are basically like thumbing their nose at us behind our backs, being like, get out of my way. Let me do my job. Like, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I got to be with this customer. Don't manage my time. No, that's a cultural problem. You got to fix that.
I'd like to discuss investing in sales enablement. Do companies even have a clear idea what sales enablement really means? It seems like if you ask 50 people what sales enablement means, you'll get 50 different definitions.
People, I think it's very much confused. And we've tried to simplify it. I think the world is broken. I think here's what the world generally thinks. I think the world generally thinks there's sales enablement and sales development. And sales enablement helps your sellers sell better by participating in training, making the collateral, doing the slide decks, providing the case studies, making sure that the process is as frictionless as possible within your CRM and your proposal process. They enable selling. Then there's sales development, which is getting meetings for salespeople. I think sales enablement is both. Like, just the word enablement to me is more all-encompassing. So to me, if I were going to define it, sales enablement is the idea that I'm going to help you sell in all facets. I'm going to support you with all the stuff I give you to help you sell. I'm going to support you by getting you the meetings. I am sales. I am the support of sales that could not go on, and sales could not go on without my enablement work.
Part of the enablement function also needs to be looking at and being able to report in whatever capacities they can, how all those things are being used. What sorts of assets, content, proposal, template, et cetera, are leading to new conversations, opportunities, wins, right? Because you need to keep dialing up and down those things on what's working.
The best sales enablement people, to your point, are not reactive order takers from salespeople. They are proactive partners. And there's a big difference there. Like you said, hey, I wanted to come share with the sales team. I need 10 minutes this week. I want to show you this particular piece of marketing collateral is generating a 60% response. This particular case study really is resonating with XYZ customers. That's where you get into really professional, high-quality enablement work. But I think the key to enablement, Will, is companies need to get over this. It's specialization. I talked about the difference between account management or customer success and sales. You got to separate those. But a lot of companies don't. Then you talk about selling and enablement. Most companies just, there's plenty of companies that do it. But there's also plenty that are probably listening going, screw that. That's the job of the salesperson. Maybe. But why? Like, why do I want my highly paid, highly skilled, specialized salespeople doing anything but pitching and closing deals? That is all I want. I don't want them creating marketing collateral. You know who I want doing that? My highly paid, highly skilled, highly specialized marketing collateral producers or CRM experts.
And in some cases, if salespeople are trying to jump into, it's what I would call some avoidance behaviors. They're trying to jump into things that just are distracting from the other harder stuff.
That's what I look out for all the time. And when I shadow one-on-ones with salespeople, when I meet with salespeople, I am a huge antenna up when I hear things like, yeah, I ran a really comprehensive CRM report and here's what I found. Or I was doing a deep dive and created a bunch of, no, don't do that. Here's what I need you doing. Selling. Your job is to sell. Let someone else do all the rest of it. Because what I'm never going to have is excuses. That's not an excuse I'm okay with, getting back to your question 8 minutes ago. Excuse I'm not okay with is I was doing some shit other than selling and it kept me from selling. No, don't do that.
Why do you say that salespeople need to be, as you said to me before, quote, an actor from time to time?
Because one of the most important jobs of a salesperson in the first 6 minutes of a sales call is to get someone to trust you and engage in a conversation that they are not like having sales resistance. That's the phrase. That's what I'm trying to get. As soon as I talk to a prospect, as soon as I jump on, I know they are trying to figure out whether or not I'm going to be an annoying, irritating, pushy, know-nothing salesperson. The faster I can get away from that, the better. Now, unfortunately, what data suggests is that there are a lot of questions that I need as a seller to know the answers to that help that A, buyers don't want to answer, and B, are going to push them in the direction of thinking that I am an annoying seller. Questions like, what's the decision-making process? Buyers don't answer that. Sellers need it. How much budget? Is there a project underway based on what I'm trying to sell you? Like all of those basic discovery questions that good sellers ask up front, buyers are irritated by. And of course they are, because I want to buy the car. Give me the damn car. At some point, you have to act a little bit. Use a tone of curiosity. Hey, I'm just curious. As your when you typically buy stuff, how's that process work internally? Okay, versus how's the process work internally? Or, wow, it's an interesting way to, you know, my favorite is like when you have prospects who are monologuing too long, like sometimes you have to interrupt. That is a super interesting point, and I want to come back to it. But that's just me. Like sometimes you got to act. Like maybe that makes me an asshole, but like sometimes you have to act in order to continue the conversational flow in a way where you're not a pushy, annoying salesperson. Like I'm curious, and but those different emotions. And the best salespeople I've seen are able to do that without knowing they're doing it.
What's the best short-term pipeline jump-starting advice you would offer? And I know that can fall into a lot of different categories. And maybe we talk about, let's say, from two standpoints, either your growth goals are much higher and a rep is having trouble reaching that higher threshold, or B, it's for a brand new rep that's just joined you. What's your best advice?
Old proposals, old opportunities. I'll give you two. One, self-serving. That one's not. Even if you're a new rep, like there was some old rep somewhere at some point who had some old opportunities that you can fish through. You are getting it at the quickest turnaround on old opportunities and old proposals. If our business is a month-to-month business, that's the rhythm of our business and the rhythm of our sales. And so if we are headed toward the end of a month and we need quick, I'm talking 5-7 days pipeline injection, what we're doing is we're going back to old proposals and old opportunities and finding creative ways to revive them.
Meaning ones that stalled or that you lost or both?
Yeah, stalled, ghosted, lost, all of them.
Because those are they're not starting from ground zero, is what you're saying. Like you already made it at least somewhere down the line.
They've probably envisioned themselves using your stuff, your thing at some point. So if I can get you back and you were lukewarm at some point, I'm better off than net new zero. I'll take this out of the abstract and personalizing it, but outsourced lead generation in general is a great way to jumpstart pipeline. It's great. If you call an outsourced lead generation firm, you go, hey, I need a ton of meetings to jumpstart my pipeline. You can get them. By and large, you can get them. That is a huge victory and not an industry that's been around forever. Like, it's a relatively new industry. And that's a big deal.
So building on that, what if you've done that and they're delivering meetings for you, but then your rate of advancing those meetings to opportunities is really low? Then what does that tell you?
It tells me that I have to diagnose and identify the root cause, because it could be that your salesperson stinks. It could be that your product or service stinks, or it could be that the person generating the leads stinks. It's one of those three. So I just have to know why they're not advancing. I'd have to listen to a few calls to figure it out. But I would diagnose for one of those three. And it's hard to do that on yourself because it's like easy. It goes back to the old saying, oh, the leads suck. Yeah, probably not though. Leads probably don't suck.
That's a good one. Let's talk about that for a minute, because that's the recurring mantra. What do you say when their mantra is, oh yeah, either I don't get enough leads or the leads suck? What is it really saying?
I don't get enough leads is different. I don't get enough leads could be true. I don't know. But somebody says the leads suck. What I'm doing immediately, put me on. Let me talk to them. I want to go to where the work is done. Okay, fine. I'll take two or three. Let me see. Let me check. Because this is the theme of what I'm saying. It could sound like jumping in and doing the work and being a shitty leader. As I've said a couple of times, like, I'm going to go see. I'm going to go look. But to me, that's being a great leader. Like, that's being a great leader. Fine.
It's putting yourself on the front lines.
And most of the time, sales leaders don't want to sell, because those who can't do teach. They're not very good at it. Fine. I don't care if I'm good or bad. I'm going to hear. I'm going to figure this damn thing out. Because most of the times when it's like the lead sucks, most of the time it's sellers aren't comfortable selling that type of lead, like a cold lead. A cold lead is, yeah, it might suck compared to a referral, but it's still doable. So you need to upskill your rep. But look, sometimes your leads, you're not talking to the right type of company. And so you just have to refine who the lead is with. And that's what I would recommend if you're diving in and you're like, ooh, these aren't the right fit. That's just a fit issue. That's an easy fix.
Can you clarify a little bit the definition of cold lead from your perspective?
Cold lead defined as someone who has had no contact with your company until you outbounded that meeting, LinkedIn, social, cold call. Yeah, truly cold. They're harder. Yeah, the lead sucks. They called me and they hadn't been referred from their friend and they didn't want to buy immediately. No shit. Like, that's tough. It is difficult. It doesn't stink. But when you get good at those, you could sell those. That's like comedy. Like, selling cold leads is like comedy. If you're funny, people will laugh. If you can sell cold leads, you're great at sales. Those are universal truths in my book.
And it's different from, say, warmer, at least lukewarm leads, people that have engaged with you on your website, they've downloaded content, they've attended a webinar, that sort of thing. Those are relatively better.
Yeah, those are a lot better. Those are orders of magnitude.
They're still not raising their hands saying, hey, I want to talk to you. I want to buy from you. But they at least know who you are. And they're giving you some digital body language saying, I'm interested in topic X, Y, or Z.
They're probably three or four times. Let me look at the math. It's probably three or four times more likely to buy from you. You got to think through that. You got to think through who's selling those leads. Do I have different people sell those leads versus the cold leads? Do I have different people sell referrals versus... You got to figure out what's the right chemistry for your particular business, because that's a resource allocation scenario.
And there's also an account-based lens that has to be put on that too. If John Doe from Company X is engaging with you in all those ways, who else at that organization are your ideal buyers that you should also be reaching out to, right? That's part of it.
Not only that, but once you get into the sales process, okay, I've talked to John Doe. This is an enterprise account. I know that I've asked the question in a curious way, like, who else inside the company is excited about this initiative? Or who else inside the company cares a whole lot about this initiative? Oh, Steve is my boss. He's excited about it. Jane is the CFO and she's really excited. Okay, cool. And then you see those people have engaged. How are you multi-threading with those people to make sure that you're not, you know, stuck with one point of contact?
What's the best way for sales leaders to create a culture of embracing outbound? You've touched on, I think, a lot of it already in the discussion, but any other ideas around creating that culture that really focuses on outbound? And conversely, any warning signs that they should look out for on their team that sort of endanger creating that culture?
The warning sign is lead complaining. That's the key warning sign. If you ultimately engage in an outbound strategy, here's what you're going to get. You're going to get people that don't show up to meetings. You're going to get unqualified prospects. You're going to get lower conversion. All of those things are going to happen. The benefit is you're also going to get more predictability in terms of your pipeline week to week, month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year. And you're going to be able to, over time, more consistently hit your goal. So you just got to deal with the stuff that's going to happen. Like, it is going to happen. And you cannot put up with any complaining. And I think it's phrases like, look, if you don't like the leads, well, give them to somebody else. These people, from an empathy perspective, this isn't like acting to be empathetic. It's true empathy. Do you want to go make 150 cold calls a day, Mr. and Mrs. Sales Rep? Bet you don't. These people are working really hard. They're trying really hard for you. And their job kind of stinks sometimes. So does yours, but theirs does too. So you better have a lot of empathy for the people whose job it is to put food in front of you to eat.
That's a really good point. That's really good advice. Jeff, I want to thank you for joining. This has been really good. Some really good areas that, again, speak to both the skill set aspect of what salespeople need to be doing and the mindset piece of how they need to prepare themselves and carry themselves and deal with adversity and things like that. So thanks again.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Big fan. Appreciate it.
Listeners, thank you, as always, for joining. You can find and follow Jeff Winters on LinkedIn. You'll also find him as the co-host of the podcast, The Grow Show, which is a show dedicated to business leaders and entrepreneurs with a growth-oriented mindset. And his website, Abstract Marketing, is spelled abstractmg.com. Please, of course, mention the show to anybody that would benefit from it. Please leave us a comment or rating or review. We really appreciate it. It helps us to further develop the show and deliver content and guests that you want to hear. Thanks again for joining us. Please feel free to scroll back and listen to any previous episodes that you've missed. And we'll look forward to having you join us again next time. Thank you for listening. And I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed. And as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.